Are you ready for some fun today? Like, seriously, this is going to be absolutely freaking incredible. I had such an amazing time interviewing Jeff Lerner, who is a self-made multimillionaire. He's the founder of the Entrepreneur Community, which, my gosh, do you know that it enrolled over 200,000 users in its first 3 years? Like, that is incredible, right? Now, in this episode, you're about to learn how he was able to inspire millions and millions of people to get in control of their future and reshape their life. We also had a really cool, raw, real, honest conversation about the importance of healing, of trauma work, and staying true to yourself. Honestly, don't miss this episode. It was so much fun. Listen up. Here we go.
Welcome to the show that's redefining success for high achievers globally. This is where you come to hear from high achievers who are making bank, making love, making memories, and who are truly happy. And here's your host, Liz Benny.
Hey, you know, Miss Kapow, Liz Benny here. Oh, my little old lord. I am very, very, very excited again. We've got the incredible, the amazing Jeff Lerner on the Happy Million Show today. How are you going there, incredible Jeff?
I'm so good. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you. Your energy is infectious, and I'm already more excited than I was 30 seconds ago.
This is very, very, very exciting. Well, actually, here's the thing. I love the fact that you talk about the word infectious and energy being infectious, because I think a lot of the time in business, like we're big energy people in business, right? We've got to have a lot of energy to do what it is that we call entrepreneurialism. And there's a lot of other things in the world that are infectious at the moment going around. Right. So let's have a conversation about business and being ourselves in business. That's a big thing to start with. Let's have a great talk about authenticity in business. Because I know, like, I've done some research on you. You are incredible and you are leading quite the movement of people. How do you stay true to yourself in business and exude energy at the same time?
Man, so, you know, it's at risk of sounding really, really trite. It's almost like trying not to try. Yep. You know, the amount of energy, and I see this like up close and personal with our students at Entre. I run a school for entrepreneurs, and like, especially in our mastermind group, just because those are the people I work with directly. They're like my friends. And for the average person to be put in an environment or put in an opportunity where we go, okay, whatever you make of this, that's what you get. But it's all about you. It all derives from you. It's your brand. It's your voice. It's your message. It's your story. It's your words. It's your feelings. It's your product. It's your service. It's just you amplified, right? Most people freak out because most of life is about, how do I show up the way that I'm expected to, or the way that I'm supposed to, not how do I show up fully me. Mm-hmm. And in entrepreneurship, especially in the world we live in now, where you have almost 8 billion people, uh-huh, at least half of us are connected to the internet most of the time. Uh-huh. We can all pop up and go live anytime we want and uh-huh, have a voice and have a brand and have a service and have a product and have a niche. And like, how the hell are you supposed to compete when there are that many people and such a low barrier to entry into the market? The answer is you have got to get obsessively like vocal and proud of who you are. And that's it. That's the only USP. That's the only, you know, advantage or edge that you've got. Every other advantage, a million other people have. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care how much subject matter expertise you have. I don't care how much anything else you have. A million other people have it too. The only thing they don't have is they're not you. So what the hell are you so scared of?
I think I just fell in love with the most incredible, amazing concept. You are incredible. You are amazing. We're going to have a raw, real, honest conversation today because obviously you've done quite the millions. I've come up through the ClickFunnels community. So, your award's behind you. That is amazing. And for the people listening, I can see 2X awards, which is representative of $20 million in revenue. Yeah.
And since you're on the subject, my C award is at my house because it's too big to fit in my car. But
nice. Okay,
I actually have big, plus, and it wouldn't even fit on the wall. Honestly, yeah, I didn't figure out what to do with it.
But here's the thing, is that there is a difference between revenue and profit. And there's also a difference between revenue and happiness. Mm. Let's have a real conversation about happiness in the entrepreneur game. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you said a mouthful. Revenue and profit. I like to think that people are fairly aware of that distinction. Although to look at the internet, you would think that, I mean, there's a lot of people out there talking about how they made $120,000. And it's like, how much of that did you work for 3 years and you grossed $120,000 and you kept maybe 20% of it? So you get what, $8,000 a year? Like, you know, but I mean, anyway, I digress.
No, that's actually really cool. I like that. This is the same conversation I have. Profit matters. Like, what are we?
Yeah. I just wrote a book.
Revenue.
I just wrote a book, and in it, I basically talked about it, because you got to, I mean, I know in your world, in my world, as people are like looking, they're online, they're like, well, who's credible? Who's real? Who's made money? What's, you got to ask these questions. So in my book, I basically said, look, prior to founding Entre Institute, my school for entrepreneurs, which I started in 2018, you know, I had generated about $55 million in revenue through online products and services. And I went through, that was spread across four different business models. There was an affiliate marketing business. There was a digital agency. Well, I guess there were three at that time. Four. I guess I had a couple small e-com stores. And then I was in a direct sales company at one point. So I had four businesses. And what I did was I took the gross revenue from each of those business models. I broke it down by profit margin. I broke it down by duration. And I was like, so here's realistically how much money I actually brought home on the 55. And it was about $16 million. So like, I'm not a billionaire, but you know what? By 39, I actually brought home $16 million without ever having had a job. And like, I'm pretty proud of that, you know?
As you should be. Like, you can shit all over everything, but like, I'm like, good on you, because I think that like, profit matters, dude. Profit matters. And
it does.
Truth. Yeah.
And then you talk about happiness. I mean, the key for me is, without ever having had a job, I'd rather have generated $16 million in 10 years with no job than $100 million in 10 years clocking into work every day. Or a billion for that matter. You know, you only need so much to live. Like, what they did this study. I think they did it about 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, it was like every dollar, once you get to about $70,000 a year, money doesn't statistically correlate to happiness anymore unless you actually drill down into what are you spending it on. In adjusted numbers now, it's about $100,000 a year. But once you get above $100,000 a year, just having more dollars doesn't make you happier. But there are three things that do make you happier. And this isn't just my opinion. This is actually science, you know, from the same study. And the three things you can spend money on to be happy are, you can create meaningful create memorable experiences with people you love, i.e. take a damn trip with your family. You can invest in things that free up your time. So hire somebody to do the laundry, or, you know, and if you want to make them happy, hire somebody to do their laundry. Like, you know, you can iterate this as many times as you want. And that goes to the third thing, which is any money that you invest in improving somebody else's quality of life. And, you know, people say money doesn't buy happiness. And I say the only people that say money doesn't buy happiness haven't given enough away.
Okay. So as I said, prior to pressing record on this particular interview, we're going to go raw, real, and honest, because I think that the people that are consuming a lot on the internet, consume, scroll, whether it's on TikTok, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on Facebook, they're seeing a lot of flashes of what other people's life is like. And to go back to what you were saying before, the only way to really crush it online, which is a very masculine thing, is to actually be 100% yourself, which is actually, you know, balancing out that feminine energy as well. So that's what I heard from you, is that the people who are really being themselves, being happy, making the money, making the profit, building the dream, building the future that they actually want, is the people who are actually foundationally being themselves and doing the inner work so that they can outwardly create the life that they want. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the best thing I ever did for my business was going to therapy.
Yeah.
Super quick chronology of my business and my life story. So I was like, I always was a misfit. I never fit in. I say misfit, I mean, like, if I tried to fit, I would miss. Like, I just didn't fit. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find, you know, I was the square peg that was always bumping into round holes. And finally, I realized, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Like, if it is to be, it's up to me. I'm going to have to carve my own path in life. And there's a whole story on how I realized that. And I actually dropped out of what I would call the system. And I have a book coming out called Escaping the Broken System. So I talk a lot about the system, and I sound like a conspiracy guy. I'm not a conspiracy guy. I just see things as they are. There's a cradle to grave sort of procession of systems that we enter into, and then we matriculate out of into the next one. We live in a system of systems, right? Whether it's, you know, you're born into the medical system, you move into the school system. At a certain point, you graduate into another part of the school system that also involves getting involved in the banking system and taking on usually debt. Then you graduate out of that. Now you're still in the banking system with student debt. Now you move into the employment system. And from there, you start to transition into contributing into the retirement system. The whole time you're contributing into the government, the tax system. And like, it's all work. Like, they've stitched together all these systems, so we never get a minute to just be ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw that early on, and I was like, this doesn't feel right to me. I don't think this is how, I think I would have been happier as like a hunter gatherer or something, where at least I can, if I get gored by a buffalo, okay, at least, you know, I don't want a system to save me. I'd rather just get gored by the damn buffalo, right? And so that was kind of me. I like never really fit. And I hovered around the fringe as a jazz musician. I played piano. I would play gigs. I survived. I was able to eat, not much more. And as I was always starting businesses, and I late 20s, I started making some money with affiliate marketing. And that was kind of the first business model that got me some traction. And, you know, I did okay, but it really wasn't until my early 30s when I met a girl, and she was a single mom with three kids. And I was living in New York City, and she lived in St. George, Utah, where I live now. This little town in Utah I'd never heard of. And I'm, because this is just how I am, I'm like, oh, you know what? I really love this woman. And everybody in my life is telling me that it's a bad idea to date a single mom, and it's a bad idea to have a long distance relationship. And it's everything about this is a bad idea. And since usually when people tell me something's a bad idea, I end up doing it anyways, I might as well just do it again. And I quit everything I was doing in New York, and I packed up a U-Haul, and I drove to St. George, Utah. And I showed up at her front door, and I was like, I know it's a little rushed. If you're not okay with me moving in, I'll get an apartment, but I would like to be here with you and try to make a life together. And the backstory is that about a month before that, for her 1-year-old or 2-year-old daughter had called me daddy. Without prompting from either of us, but just because I was the only man that was ever around, right? Because, you know, I guess not really a sad story. It's a happy story now, but her biological dad had bailed out when Jacqueline was pregnant, my wife. And I'm very proud of my family.
Oh, wow.
I love my family.
For those listening, by the way, Jeff just showed a really cute photo of his family.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is audio too, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I get there and I'm like, and she's like, I don't know. This is a whole thing, right? I was like, okay, why don't we go find a therapist and say, okay, I've been divorced. You've been divorced. You've got kids. I want to be their dad. There's a lot that could go wrong here. And we could, it's not just you and me. Like, we could end up screwing up these three wonderful kids. So let's start with therapy right out of the gate. Like, you know, before we even get serious, that's kind of a weird way to start a relationship. It's like, hey, let's start by going to therapy. But we did. And I thought I was just going to learn how to be a decent husband and a father. I had no idea what it was going to do for me in business. Learning to listen, learning to actually shut the fuck up and listen to somebody for once, and not be thinking about what I was going to say when they stopped talking, but be just trying to listening solely with the intention of understanding, feeling, and connecting with the person. Imagine that, especially for a guy, right? And so, I mean, little things like that, I just had no idea in a million years that what was going to come out of that was somebody that deeply loved and cared about people, wanted, was only interested in win-win. I didn't want to win anymore if it was a zero-sum win. I only wanted to win-win with people. And because of that, because of therapy and all the work I did and all the healing, you know, I've been able to build teams. There are people that are beyond loyal that work with me because they know that I love them and I put them first and I put our students first and I put our customers first. And this is not stuff you can fake. And it's not even stuff that you can just want. You actually have to heal before you can start to show up this way. And it was gruesome. Years of therapy, thousands of hours of therapy. You know, we did every Wednesday for 2 years, we would go for 3 hours and do small group therapy work. Like holding grown men in my arms while they cried out their childhood trauma. And I would lay in their arms and do the same. And you just reach a point where, like, now I go on the internet and what, I'm going to be scared to be myself? Like, I've seen some of the most messed up shit in therapy, and I've said the most messed up shit, and I've looked inward and found the most messed up shit. I got nothing to hide anymore. And that's why I'm good at what I do.
Yeah, well, I if it's okay, I would love the opportunity to not just say that you're good, you're exceptional at what you do. And I think to become exceptional, you need to get rid of the baggage that is holding you down in the good space. Like, you've done what most people don't want to do because of a stigma. Like, oh, I'm broken, I'm weak, and I shouldn't. Because if I go to therapy, it means that I'm less than, I'm the problem, I'm the fault. But I think, honestly, I think people don't realize the programming that they got prior to their conscious ability to even think of what they were doing. So the stuff that's going on for people in their life, their modus operandi, their blueprint, they often didn't create the blueprint that they're living in life with, correct?
Yeah, I don't know anybody who, absent a very intentional intervention and very deliberate phase of change and evolution in their life, I don't know anybody who created the blueprint that they operate from.
There you go.
Like, how could you? One of the things I learned from my therapist is children, they're the best observers in the world and they're the worst translators in the world. They see everything and they don't know what any of it means. Mm. So everything that they see, they end up creating a story to try to explain it. But it's a story that's based on such limited information and limited context of how the world works. Virtually all the stories are wrong. And so then in order to make sense of it, they look to who? Their parents. They look to their teachers. They look to people that have their own, you know, that went through this same process of bungling their own stories and get, you know. We don't come from like enlightenment has been a very fringe thing for most of human history. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people alive at any given moment in human history are not what we would consider enlightened. And yet they're the preponderance of the influence that creates consciousness in the world. And so the amount of work that it takes to unlearn and unthink and unwind everything that we were born into is massive. It takes most of us, 30, 40, 50 years to end up in therapy, and we want it to take 4 sessions to work our way out of it? It's craziness.
Look, I love this. I love that we've gone to this because, you know, on this podcast, we're raw, real, and honest about everything because, you know, a lot of other people have spoken about suicide or attempted suicide or the fact that they suddenly found themselves in a very dark place and they couldn't quite understand why. And then in those moments have gone out and actually gone, holy moly, I need help. And I really want people to understand here, even though this is the Happy Millions show, and I really want people to understand that there is, it's not just about, your success is not defined by your bank account. Certainly is not defined by your revenue, because your revenue, shmrevenue, like you can't buy a house with revenue. You can buy it with lots of other things, right? So I love the fact that we've gone here. For me personally, like I do spiritual healing, I do emotional healing, I do EMDR therapy. I do as much as humanly possible because I know that when I come to the table, when I come to the table of business, if I'm triggered, if I'm traumatized, and if I'm bringing all my triggers to the table, I'm perpetuating that in the lives of others. And that's my moral responsibility to do my work so as to serve at the highest level. And by virtue of doing that, you actually, it's amazing the rewards that come back, because, you know, it is that beautiful win-win. Dude, I love this. So let's take Jeff's mind back to 10 years ago. You were already, quote unquote, crushing it in business 10 years ago. You were doing some really great stuff. What's the difference now between how you operate with the modus operandi, the mindset, the belief systems that you have now versus 10 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, 10 years ago, I was making what most people would consider good money. I don't feel like I was crushing it, certainly not at life. And I'm not even really sure at business. I couldn't build a team to save my life 10 years ago. Here's the one thing I had going for me was my work ethic. So I would work myself into a positive result just through sheer brute force. And that, I would say that phase started for me about 13 years ago when I went online, and at least I started, you know, like, it's kind of like the guy he's trying to get in really good shape, but all he ever eats is ice cream. Simply switching from ice cream to like chicken breast is going to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean that he's necessarily working out the right way or that he's got all the other parts dialed in, but just the switch from ice cream to chicken breast is going to do a lot. For me, that was the switch from brick and mortar business to online business.
Yeah.
Brick and mortar business in 2008, the Great Recession, that was ice cream. That was like trying to get in shape eating ice cream. At least when I switched to chicken breast, which is I'm going to do business on the internet, now I had a shot. Now I had something to work with. That coupled with work ethic, I got some results for a few years. But, you know, the way I approached it was very... It was still very like, I need money, because if I have enough money, then I don't have to feel so bad.
Yeah.
That was the paradigm of my life. And it was really meeting Jacqueline. It was meeting my wife that made me, I don't know. It just kind of opened me up. Like she's a mother, and she's, you know, think about it. Most men that meet their wives, they don't meet their wives when they're all, and maybe I'm in society today, maybe this isn't true, but generally you don't meet a woman who's already got kids. You don't typically have the opportunity to fall in love with a mother unless it's a second marriage, which it was. I got to fall in love with a woman who was fully in her essence as a mother. And the amount of love that just oozes out of every one of her pores taught me more about life than I've learned from life, from school or business or anything else that I've ever been around. And when I was exposed to that, and when I realized not only does this exist, but this is actually interested in me. And we're only interested in things that we resonate with or that we share some kind of a frequency with. And so if this amount of love energy is interested in me, it means there must be love energy on this side that's resonating here. Maybe money isn't going to get me to happiness all along, because honestly, if I could feel this feeling all the time, I wouldn't even need money. And I just started exploring. It's like, you know, have you ever seen the movie Pleasantville?
No, I haven't.
It's a black and white movie. And then all of a sudden, I don't even remember the context, but all of a sudden, oh, I know what it is. The guy starts to fall in love, and now all of a sudden he can see colors. He lived in a black and white world, and suddenly he can see colors. Mm-hmm. And everything changes, and that's pretty much what happened to me. And all of a sudden, it really wasn't about money anymore. And I know that this sounds cliche, and my Lord, I know that when you don't have money, this is the last thing you want to hear. But if you will stop chasing it, and you will start focusing on its prerequisite, which is value and service and solving problems for actual people who love the result that you help them achieve. All the money in the world, all the money you could ever need will find you. And that's the switch that happened for me in my early mid-30s between falling in love, becoming a father, going to therapy, and making it not about the money anymore.
What happened for you to make that decision in business and to build that awareness where it looked money, money, money. I've got to get money. I've got to get money. I've got to get money. And then changing that to, you know what, like, how do I serve? How do I provide value in the marketplace? Was there something that happened in your business that made you make that shift from ice cream to chicken breast?
You know, I've never actually thought about this until just this very moment, but there was, and it's this. So in 2012, sorry, I switched from affiliate marketing to starting a digital agency. And that was also the time I'd started going to therapy. 2012 is also when I got married. So I moved here in 2011 and we were together for about a year and a half before we finally got married, which means 2012 is also when I started the paperwork to formally adopt her kids, who are now three of my four kids. I should say our kids. And so all these things happened in 2012, but the way that it trickled into business is when I started my agency, I needed an assistant. And so the person that I hired, her name is Amber. She's still with me to this day. In fact, she probably was involved in booking this interview. She's my chief of staff now. She runs my whole life. But Amber came on board as my assistant. And when I started my agency, it was like me and her building it, right? Like I would get on the phones and I would close customers and I would teach her how to fulfill the services that I had sold and she would fulfill. And so the way I met Amber was her son was really good friends with our son, me and Jacqueline's oldest son. And they were friends at school. And Amber had been a volunteer mom at the school. And she lost her position at the school and was looking for work. And I hired her as my assistant. The fact that she was friends with my wife, the fact that her son was friends with my son, meant that basically I didn't have the option to be an asshole. Like all this loving people, taking care of people, being a good person, all this stuff I was learning in therapy, it was like, oh man, I gotta be that way in business too. Because now that I'm working with a really close family friend, if I'm all about me, like it's gonna be weird. And it kind of forced me to try being loving and service focused in business, not which I wouldn't have resisted. I was clumsy at it because I had never really come at it from this place of I'm solely here to build up other people. And all of a sudden it was working so well and our agency started to grow and everybody in town was like, oh, I want to work there because I hear it's this really awesome, fun, cool place to work. And the boss comes in and he does like personal development trainings every morning. And he's like trying to help us all be better people. And we actually ended up creating a relationship with the court system here where we would hire people out of drug court. So these are people that are on early release programs for drug convictions. And we became a place that the court liked sending people to work. Because we would put so much. So I was just basically saying that, you know, what started as me just trying to be a nice person to my assistant because she was friends with my wife, turned into like, hey, let's make this a really positive and fun place to work. And we started doing personal development together and we started trying to come up with ways to really, really, you know, align everyone in the organization and my agency, which was called Zerly. It became known, so St. George, Utah, where I live, it's not a huge town. There's maybe 200,000 people in the whole county. And we became known as kind of like a cool place to work. And in fact, we ended up making a relationship with the what's called drug court, which is a local court system. And there's an early release program for people with drug convictions. And one of the conditions for their early release is they have to go out and get a job. And so in the drug court community, it became known as like, hey, there's this place called Zerly that'll hire us because not everybody will hire people under those circumstances. And we would hire them and we would really, you know, invest a lot in like personal development and creating a really positive place to be. And we, you know, not every story was a success. Unfortunately, we had some bad incidents with that, but we helped a lot of people get their life back on track. And it was my first experience of what's now got a buzzword around it. It's called stakeholder capitalism, which is like capital as opposed to shareholder capitalism, which is just how much money can we make for the owners of the business, as opposed to how much positive, you know, outcome can we create for all the different people, all the different stakeholders in the business, the employees, the vendors, the shareholders, the executives, the customers. And really, it was just by virtue of having an assistant where I was kind of forced to be a good person, I realized, oh, this, not only does this make business a lot more fun, it also, I sleep really well at night, and holy crap, we're having amazing results. People actually want to come to work and they want to do great work.
Dude, you talked about finances in here. You talked about family. You talked about friends. You've talked about fun. And it's really fun. And this all equates to this beautiful concept of freedom, whatever freedom equates to for the person who is listening to this right now. So let's just play a little bit of a game here for a second. There's a person listening to this right now. We're going to have a double whammy turn at this. There's okay. A person listening to this right now who just is, they've made millions of dollars already, and they're just not feeling connected to what they're doing anymore. They're making the money, but they are really depressed. They're really disheartened. They're dull. They're like, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. And they're probably starting to turn on their business. Let's shine a light on it for them right now. What, in your opinion, might they need to change about their circumstances in order to have a business and a life that they love?
You know, I think that somebody said the other day, you know, almost everybody's going to have a job at some point in their life. Fewer people will have a career. But most people, that's actually their goal. Like, I want to have a career that's fulfilling. And this person was saying, but there's a third level that is really where life gets pretty wonderful, which is if you can find a calling. You have a job, you have career, which is essentially a job you can stay in and grow with for a long time, and then a calling. And I think if somebody's got a business and they're not fulfilled, it's because they're essentially in a career, but they still haven't found their calling. Mm. And I think you have to ask yourself, what's my calling? And your calling is there's gonna be two things that I think make it clear. One is it will have been there all along. Like, you'll be able to look back at all the major turning points in your life, all the stories in your life, all the experiences, the formative experiences of your life, and you'll be able to see, ooh, the seeds were being planted here and here and there and there and there and there, and it's just all been building and waiting for me to discover it now. And the other thing is, it's gonna be something that you're pretty good at naturally. Like, you're not going to be called to do something that you suck at. And there's this concept called ikigai, which is a Japanese concept where you say, okay, what does the world need? What am I great at? What can I get paid for? And I'm blanking out on the fourth. And there's like this intersection Venn diagram of these four things. And I think that's a good way to look at it too. If you Google the word ikigai, I-K-I-G-A-I. But fundamentally, it's going to be like, what's been there lurking all along that you feel like you are given some gifts to excel at? And I'll tell you, for me, I'll give you an example. It's like, what do I do now? I have a business, and it's actually why I sold my agency. Like, my agency was important for me because I had lessons to learn and I had milestones to hit, but it was not my calling. Mm-hmm. That's why I sold it. And frankly, I sold it for pennies on the dollar of what it was worth. And I even got screwed out of some of the pennies because it was the way the deal went down. And I have no regrets about any of it because it wasn't my calling. It was time for me to get out, and it was time to do what I'm doing now. And the reason I know that what I'm doing right now is my calling is because it's been there all along. I dropped out of high school because I wanted to feel free. In middle school, I got sent to a counselor because my teacher, who was also well, whatever. She, the English teacher, also happened to be the middle school counselor. She was like, she told my parents, there's something wrong with this kid. Like, he, like, if he's going to stay in this school, he needs to go see a psychiatrist. They took me to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist was just like, you're bored and you don't want to be bored anymore. You know, like, you're not a problem child. You just don't want to sit in your little automaton robot position and be wait to be told what to do. I remember telling my psychiatrist, I'm like, yeah, I was reading this book, and there's only four places in the world where people move when bells ring: schools, factories, prisons, and military camps. And he's like, yep, you nailed it. I don't think school's good for kids, but they don't pay me to tell them that. So I don't know. I'll tell them something else. But he told me straight up. He's like, yeah, school's not good for kids. It's not your fault. So I look at my life, and ever since I was a kid, this thread has been there of like, I want to be free. I want to be self-determined. I want to be autonomous. I want to be independent. I want to sink or swim on the basis of my own merit. All I've ever wanted out of life. And so how do I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Because that's what I'm showing people. I'm helping people become entrepreneurs, right? So, and I happen to think I'm pretty good at it, you know, because I get on shows like this and I don't shut up. I never run out of stuff to say on the matter because I'm so endlessly passionate and fired up about it. And so if somebody's sitting in their job and they're not fulfilled, I mean, okay, today, sorry, tomorrow, that's on you. You've got the feedback, move.
100%. So what was the feedback that you were getting when you were in your agency? So at the end of that, it was starting to feel different, like it, and you knew it wasn't your calling. What was the feedback you were getting viscerally in your body from relationships? What was happening then for you to know that it was time to move on?
Because I was checking the numbers every day.
Oh.
I was basically, my KPI, my key performance indicator that I was obsessing over was the revenue.
Yeah.
I wasn't even really looking at qualitative outcomes anymore. I wasn't asking. It used to be enough for me to just have my employees tell me how much they love working there and that working there, you know, I had people tell me working here saved my life.
Exactly.
And that was enough. But now I wasn't even soliciting that feedback anymore. I was just checking the numbers. And that's how I knew it was time to move.
So it sounded like it was a little bit out of balance. And that was probably a massive mic drop moment for a lot of people listening and watching this right now. Thank you for being raw, real, and honest. I really, really, really love this. So we're coming up to the top of our time here. I was going to say the top of the hour, but whatever. So we're going to be finishing up here soon, but before we go, we're going to have a little bit of fun. I'm going to do some really cool Spitfire questions with you here. We're just going to have some fun with that. And then I'm going to aim to go even deeper with you because I feel like there is this bigger message that is in you right now that I think entrepreneurs and business owners really, really, really need to hear. They need to go to a deeper place. We're not going to go there right yet. That was a little bit of a hook to the end for the amazing entrepreneurs and business people listening to this right now. That was a hook to the end. So we're going to have some fun with you.
That was
Jeff,
good.
Right
that
now.
Was good marketing right there. I hope everybody took note.
There we go. I've been in the industry for a little time. It's some fun. Okay, so here we go. We're going to do some very quick questions right here. I'm going to give you a quick second to get that juice or whatever that kombucha is.
I'm good.
Okay. So what is the last thing that you bought and why?
This may not be the last thing, but the thing that comes to mind, because it was like a week ago, was I bought my wife a car.
And why?
Because happy wife, happy life. And more than that, because it's the whole story I've told. She is more than my better half. She showed me what life could be like and made me really excited about living it. And if the least she deserves is a nice car, honestly.
Oh, my friend, you exude so much love for your wife. I just love being witness to that. I hear that a lot from people. You know, I dote on my amazing wife a lot. And people are like, oh, your love is so incredible. So it's really nice to hear someone else dote on their wife so much and so openly. That's beautiful. Okay, so who in your life has most positively impacted your life? This is probably the most stupid question that I could ask right now. But
yeah, it's the obvious answer has already been said, right? But I'm going to go ahead and suggest my mom as a close second.
Yeah.
One of the really profound experiences of my life has been to realize that the lesson that I needed to learn from my wife, my mom was trying to teach me all along. But as an insecure man, for 30 years, I couldn't hear it from the woman that loved me most in the world. And for some reason, and my mom passed away last year.
I'm sorry.
And I remember to this day, I'm just like, I can't believe she showed me what life could be like when you come at it from a place of love and service. And she just took care of so many people, and that I was so blind to it for so long. And, you know, she's still with me and she knows I know now, but.
Yeah. Oh, firstly, I acknowledge that. I received that. And I'm sure that there are so many people watching and hearing this right now. That was huge. So thank you for going there. Thank you. You're an amazing man. I just want to say that. And the fact that as a solid, amazing man, you're talking about something which could be perceived as fluffy and airy-fairy and girly. But the essence of love that you're bringing to this podcast is just stunning. So thank you. I see you in that.
Thank you.
With that, the next question that I have for you is that if an actor was to play you in your life movie, who would it be?
That's a good question. You know, he's way too handsome for the part, but I kind of feel like Matthew McConaughey could pull it off because he's got that same thing you're talking about where like he's like a rugged man's man, but damn, is he sensitive.
Oh, yeah. And you actually have some of the same idiosyncrasies as him, too. So that would probably be a good thing.
I received that. Thank you.
That's amazing.
I love Matthew McConaughey. So thank you.
What's the best place you have ever traveled?
Best place I've ever traveled. Geography or considering the company and who I traveled with? I gotta ask for a distinction.
Let's do both.
If it's just off of geography, I'm gonna go ahead and say that the Swiss Alps.
Oh wow!
Are the most just breathtaking place that I've ever been. If I'm gonna consider the company, I'm gonna probably say my wife and I took a trip to Turks and Caicos once that was just. I've never laughed so much, and I've just never been such a sustained elevation of happiness for like 6 whole days. I don't know. So.
Wow, dude, that is awesome. And what would be your last meal request? It's kind of going from happiness to death, but let's have some fun here. So what would be your last meal request?
Honestly, like a Pittsburgh style ribeye. Medium rare with a good char.
Dude, the number of people that say ribeye medium rare is insane. It is beautiful. I just love it. Okay, one final question here before we get into the close here. You have $1 million that's sitting here right now. I'm about to gift it to you right now. You have to give it away. Who do you give it away to and why?
Man, I want to give some like really like elaborate technical answer about putting it in some multi-generational fractional trust or something. But to keep it really simple, honestly, I think I'm giving it to my kids because they're the ones that are most likely to do with it what I'd do with it.
Dude, I absolutely love that. I absolutely love that. And it's really funny because people come at that question from a different approach. And the multi-generational thing that you wanted to bring up, that's the way we think as entrepreneurs. So many people have actually gone down that rabbit hole. It's great. And then you just like, and then it sounded like you made that decision based on being fiduciarily responsible with the money, you know, and finding a means and a way for the money to be responsibly distributed. That's amazing. Okay. So where do people find out about you and the book that's coming out?
So you can find me anywhere on social media. Jeff Lerner Official is my handle on every platform but Twitter, because Twitter, that's too many characters. It's the Jeff Lerner on Twitter, but everywhere else, Jeff Lerner Official. Go on, or you just type in Jeff Lerner and it pops up usually. Mm-hmm. First thing, click on me. Don't click on any of my ridiculous imposter scammers that pretend to be me and will try to con you into their crypto Ponzi scheme or whatever, please. And the book, yeah, so we'll have a lot of announcements about the book. Pub date is August 2nd. And there'll be about a 6-month major build up. You'll be able to get on a, you know, pre-launch list and even maybe get some advanced copies out and stuff like that.
Oh, that is amazing. I can't wait to read it. Honestly, I just can't wait to read it. When you were talking about the system and this system and this system, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I hear you in every part of my being. I hear you on that. Okay. So one final thing here. We've talked about lots of incredible stuff today. What is a final message that you have for the person sitting there listening or watching this right now, and they just really need you to go deep? They want that incredible, amazing life. They know in their core that they can, and they just can't really see the pathway for them at the moment. What do you want to say to them that will touch their soul, touch their heart, touch their being in the most incredible way?
So, no pressure. Jeez.
I know. As I was building that question up, I was like, dang, this is a hard one.
Yeah. I got to touch him a lot of places. So I'll say this. When I was in my early 20s, this is a really formative, essential experience for me. I was a piano player. I think I said that. I played piano in my 20s. And I got into this one agency that booked me in the homes of multiple billionaires. So I would play piano private parties for like billionaires in their home. And one of them was a guy named Bob McNair, who owned the Houston Texans football team. He's the guy that brought football back to Houston. So he was like a local legend. Everybody loved this guy, big city. And I was playing in his house and he talked to me. I got to talk to him one-on-one for like a pretty long while, like 30 minutes, just me and him just shooting the breeze before people started showing up. And he told me about asymmetrical risk. And asymmetrical risk is when there's a lot more potential upside than downside, right? And these are the risks that, like, they might not work out, but if they work out, they're going to work out big, right? And he was basically saying, he's like, most people go through life with a kind of a binary view of risk. They're like, well, I either win or I lose, and losing sucks, so I'm not going to try. But when you take the right risks, you might lose 100 times, but then you win, and you win 1,000 times whatever you risk. That's the concept of asymmetrical risk, right? And he said, and Bob McNair has a really great story where it took him about 20 years to find success. He didn't actually find success till he was in his mid 40s. He failed at everything he tried till he was older than I am. And you know, at the time he died, he had about $4 billion. So he only had to get one thing right. And it got really, really right. Right. And he basically said, you know, I got lucky because I only had to fail like 25 times. Technically, if I was taking 1,000-to-1 shots, I should have been willing to fail 999 times and I still would have come out ahead. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to suggest to people is, a lot of us, we don't like failure because we put it in a binary term and say, oh, well, I'm either a winner or a loser, and I failed, so therefore I'm a loser. But when you're going after the right things, you should expect to fail repeatedly. And what I'm now going to do to contextualize this and go, I think, a layer deeper for you is I'm going to say the biggest risk is figuring out how to be yourself. And people don't try that, because when you try to be yourself and it doesn't work, oh, the shame. It's okay. I mean, a business failing is bad enough, but what about when I'm the thing that doesn't work, right? I tried to be myself at the party. I tried to be myself with the girl. I tried to be myself on that Instagram live that I did. I tried to put myself out there and be vulnerable, and people didn't like it. Or maybe they actually did like it. They just didn't give you enough claps to let you know that they liked it because maybe they were just busy and they didn't have time, right? But in your story, in your head, you'll come up with a story about how you tried to be yourself and you failed. There is no greater asymmetrical, there is no more asymmetrical risk than being yourself. Because however many times it takes you to get it right and to find your stride and to find your voice and to find your message and to find your congruency and to find your calling, I don't care if you fail 1,000 times. When you get it right, it will pay for itself 1,000,000 times over. It is the most asymmetrical risk in the world. When you find who you truly are and you get, and then from that moment forward, you get to live a life as nothing but that person, you're the richest man in the world.
Old woman. Let's just say
man. I meant human. Richest human in the world. Yeah. Mankind.
Look, dude. Oh my gosh, that was. You said you know no pressure. I'm so glad I put you under pressure. Like, that was beautiful. I really, really, really love where you went there. Like that one landed on me personally. I love that because I've spent a lot of time stepping back from that which other people wanted me to become. To become and be me.
Yeah.
Because and to go back and pick up those pieces. So for me, this has been an exceptional podcast because it's like, oh yes, it's just affirmation and confirmation that the big shifts and the big changes that I'm doing personally right now to touch and to change the marketplace in the way that I'm called to change it. It's just like, yes, of course, of course, of course, of course. So there will be people listening to this right now that haven't quite done as much work as me and haven't quite done as much work as you, but they will hear right now that they're on the right track. So thank you so much for being raw, real honest with me on this. It has been an absolute pleasure, an absolute delight to have you on the show. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
My word. Thank you, Liz. This has been so much fun. I'm really glad that you do this and I'm glad that you create this space where we can have the conversations that matter and that I think the world needs more of.
That's a wrap, folks. Liz and the Kapow team hope you've loved this episode of The Happy Million Show. Please help us to spread this mission far and wide by leaving us a 5-star review with an amazing comment and be sure to subscribe so you're notified with future episodes. We've got some incredible guests lined up for you to hear from to help you build both a business and a life you absolutely love. Full of fun, freedom, family time, friends, fulfillment, fitness, and other ifs. You can fill in the blank. Subscribe now, and for your daily cup of kapower, head over to lizbenny.com. Come on, you know you want to.